And welcome one and all to People's Internet Radio. Let me know if I'm too loud. I am a little, I think I'll lower that down. And apparently it is 9:05 and the 8th of June 2014. Seemingly, depending on who you ask, as I always say here, because it does, it depends on who you ask. Okay, welcome folks to the show tonight. Put a link into the chat box there, and I want you all to have a little wee click and a little wee peek. What it is, effectively, is this is a map of every place in the world that the British, and I'm going to say the Crown instead of the British, but that the Crown has invaded in pink. There was only 22 countries left out, and I might add, they were tiny. So I posted it onto Facebook, and I put a little caption to go along with it. And the little caption simply reads, "Do you really think the Empire is no more?" Have a look at that map. And look at the countries that either they hadn't bothered with or haven't felt the need to go into just yet. Now, some will say that's an... in fact, Tom Ewing just put it in the chat box. I was going to say, some will say that that's an inaccurate map. Yes, I agree. There are areas of it. However, what I'm trying to get across here is the Crown, the controllers. And I don't just mean the British Crown when I talk about the Crown, folks. I mean those who operate and, how can I put this, those who choose and make choices. It seems that we must all either lump or like. And if you lump it, there's a price. If you like it, there's also a price. And this group, these individuals, entities, people, call them what you will, they have us by the short and curlies. And why do they have us by the short and curlies? Well, quite simply, we bend over and we allow them to shaft us. We use their paper for trading, and then we complain if we're not happy with the usury in the system. But we're using their paper. It's not your money. I was thinking today at the meetup, I had a fantastic meetup again today, by the way. Some new faces again. But I was thinking about it, and we can't change the entire world. But what we can do is we can change our entire world, one man at a time. We can also teach our children. And we can explain things in a manner that will facilitate our children understanding and knowing as they grow that there's two sides to the coin. Because you really need your children to understand both aspects. When your children grow and mature, as mine are doing now, they have to interact with the system to some degree, sometimes to a great degree. Sometimes they get a degree. But we need to try to give them the intellectual tools to handle and cope so that they don't automatically just hand themselves over. And it's a long road ahead and it's a hard task. But it's not impossible. I looked at that map and I thought, let's assume the map is completely inaccurate and let's assume the Empire has taken the entire planet, which effectively it pretty much has. I know people will argue, oh, Russia's run by these guys, and Africa's run by these, and America's run by others, and that. You know what? None of it's run by us. You run your own little life, my own little life. I run mine, you run yours. And once we learn how to conduct ourselves in a certain way, things will change for us. And I believe others will notice there are changes in our lives, and differences that we seem to be able to accomplish things that they can't accomplish. And they're going to want to know about it. And they will come here. And they will come and talk to us and to you and to me. And they will begin to learn and understand that the simplicity of what we talk about here and how easy it is. And yet we also accept it is extraordinarily difficult to grasp the simplicity of what we're saying. It is a complex simplicity, if you will. And a lot of people have, you know, they have trouble with that. But yes, it is simple. And yes, we can make changes and we can be effective. I'm going to say things tonight that maybe I wouldn't normally say. I don't know, perhaps in the past. But I'm going to go back over some of the past. In the beginning, when we began TNS Radio and when we were doing it, we used to attempt to educate people about, you know, language, law, legality, all of that type of stuff, as best we could, within the, you know, the kind of confines of the site we were on at the time. And over time, we've matured and we've grown and we've become sharper and more attuned. Maybe that's the term I'm looking for. More attuned. The way we're going to fix things, folks, is we're going to fix them one at a time. One teeny weeny little thing at a time. And over time, that's going to accumulate. And it's going to have an effect. Already we are affecting an awful lot of people's lives. And hopefully for, and in all positive ways. I was looking at some of the news stories. And as expected, the dead babies is getting a lot of attention now, nationally and internationally. But there's so many stories out there. Where do you begin? And I think what I was thinking of was, what changed things from a nation that literally buried babies silently, quietly, without informing anyone, in shame? What changed? And how long did that change take to happen before it came to the point we're at now? Whereas now, as a nation, we cry out when we hear of such horrendous things in our past. But I want to bring everyone forward to right now. These same things, those same crimes, they are happening right now, today, in Ireland, on this land, and worse, if you can even imagine it. We haven't really moved forward. We've been led to believe we've moved forward. Those same crimes are happening right now. There's a website I was looking at, menshumanrightsireland.org, and they have a petition up there. And I'm not trying to encourage people to sign the petition, because I don't think that's going to change anything one way or the other. However, the information on the site is quite shocking. And it starts off, "We the undersigned, in recognition of the 5-to-1 suicide ratio of men to women in Ireland." And I had to stop for a moment and think about that. 5-to-1 ratio. Now, to garner figures together, to work out that the ratio is 5-to-1, how many suicides is that entirely? Very hard to find out what the so-called national figure of suicides is. I'm led to believe it's way higher than anyone is prepared to admit. I was talking to somebody who said they knew the coroner, or somebody in the coroner's office, and they told me, again, don't know if this is 100%, but I'm going to go with it. They seemed very genuine, and they're very upset and disturbed by it, but they told me 7 a day. Suicides in Ireland, that's what they told me. 7 a day. That's just crazy, folks. 1 a day is too much. 1 a week. 1 a month. There shouldn't be any. 1 is too much. The root cause of all of these suicides, once you start to strip away all the other issues, and when you go to the source of all the other issues, well, what generated the other issue? You end up at one single issue, I believe, in every single case. Money. Money, 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 money. The monetary system. I know you can argue, well, we're not using money, Vin. Fine. But the monetary system, the economic structure, there's no way out of it. What happens, you see, when you hit the point in your life whereby you have enough money to get by, and you can put food on the table, shoes on your kids' feet, pay your bills, And when one day you can't afford it, the rest of the entire system suddenly turns on you and it consumes you. Once you get to the point where you have now one thing you cannot pay for or affect payment on, you are now viewed as something to liquidate. And that is what's happening. They even call it that, don't they? Liquid assets. They liquidate you. We need to start thinking differently. We need to start operating differently. And we need to start conducting ourselves differently. And we can do it. And we're going to do it. I believe we've already made the choice. I believe a lot of us are going to have to wait for many others to just simply catch up, as it were. And I think they will. But we can't be ridiculous about this. I hear a lot of people saying, oh, monetary systems need to go. No. We're going to need a monetary system, folks. It's essential. There's too many of us to just do this. Oh, let's all just share in the big trippy vortex, as Harry would call it, where, you know, you have what you need and I get what I need. That, you know, you can't. That won't work. It will not work. Not in a modern city, not in modern lifestyles, etc. It will not work. But a monetary system will work as long as it's a perfected monetary system. So I'm not going to try and educate anybody tonight about a mathematically perfected economy, but I do want everybody to make a mental note to go and visit Mathematically Perfected Economy, the website, and to begin to familiarize yourself with the site. And the first part I suggest you go to is the glossary of terms. Make yourself familiar with the glossary of terms and you'll see what I'm talking about. But quite simply, if you have a monetary system with an inbuilt mathematical terminal flaw like we have, which is what usury is, your monetary system is going to consume the people and the people's property. It is going to drain your hospitals. It's going to empty your schools or fill your hospitals and fill your schools with sick people getting sicker by the day and clever children being turned out as factory fodder. You're going to have both extremes. What you're not going to have are well-educated, well-rounded, healthy individuals. And that's not what we're seeing, right? We're seeing everywhere we go, we're seeing more corruption, more perversion. And look, this is not, I'm not a prude here, folks, but you're seeing perversion. We're seeing perverse things. I mean, you can go to a supermarket now, a shoe shop, and for your little daughter, you can buy a nice little pair of white, pink, fluffy runners with skulls and crossbones on them. Little skull and crossbone motifs on them. And we're supposed to, apparently, not think that that's shocking. I mean, think about it. We're putting symbols of death on little girlies' shoes and little boys' t-shirts, who should be out playing and enjoying themselves and having fun. They're trying to get them to think about death younger and younger. When you have usury in your system, your politicians will be trapped by that system. There is no way out for them, and they will have no choice but to bail out banks and to tell you it's all right. And that is effectively what the politician's job is nowadays, to somehow, using the mainstream media, which is no longer the mainstream media, it's now just a propaganda device. All they are able to do now is to put out propaganda to hopefully keep the lid on while they screw a bit more out of you. Water meters, for example. I'm going to get the water meters. I put up a video there during the week on water meters. And in fact, I'll actually play the audio from the video because, just to refresh both my memory and maybe, here we go. Yeah, I'll click that there. But I want you to have a listen to this in case you haven't already heard it, because I think it's important. And I'm going to talk a little more on it. Here we go. Water meters now. This is the Water Services Act 2013. As you can see, it has the sovereign seal lacking ERA underneath. Therefore, this is not part of the sovereignty of the nation. However, we'll skip down to this part here. I want you to have a look at this. In this legislation, and it is legislation, people need to stop calling legislation law. An act to make provision in relation to the installation and maintenance of water meters in dwellings. Okay, in dwellings. That's very important that you understand that. I see there's a lot of people out there complaining about the water meters being forcibly installed, and they are being forcibly installed, and on Garda Síochána seem to be supporting the side of the water meter installation company, Uisce Éireann. And this is the legislation they are relying upon, apparently, to forcibly install those meters in dwellings. Now, the interesting thing about that is this is Bunreacht na hÉireann, 1937 edition. The dwelling of every citizen is inviolable and shall not be forcibly entered save in accordance with law. Note that says with law, not positive law. However, the point I'd like to make here is if Irish Water are doing so, or Uisce Éireann, in dwellings, then the people who do not want their water meter installed should be calling the Garda Síochána and saying somebody is forcibly entering my dwelling and that they have a complaint in that regard. That will empower on Garda Síochána to act against whomever is forcing entry to your dwelling. And I will tell you why. There is also what's known as positive law in the Constitution. You'll see with law, just law on its own like this. And then if you skip forward to Article 41.11, you'll see the likes of this positive law. Now, what is positive law? Positive law, this was looked up in Modern Legal Usage, Volume 2, I believe, written by Brian A. Garner. This term is sometimes used with little idea of its precise sense. Positive law, referring primarily to statutes and regulations, might be defined as coercively implemented law laid down with a particular political community by political superiors to govern members of the community, as distinct from moral law or law existing in an ideal community or in some non-political community. So if Irish Water are relying on this legislation to fit a meter in your dwelling, outside of your property line, most people don't realise, is actually the centre of the road. When you purchase your property in Ireland, you own to the centre of the road, and the portion of property outside your front garden gate, the footpath, etc., that is still your property. Now, even if it's been handed over, inverted commas, handed over to the council, it is still your property too. Which is why, for example, if somebody trips outside your doorway and if it hasn't been handed over to the council, they can sue you because it's your property. If they trip and it is handed over and they hurt themselves and decide to sue the council, they can do so, but they could also choose to sue you. They could choose to sue you too. Now, if you do not want a water meter fitted and you call on Garda Síochána, you should be very polite, give a name and address and tell them that you have a complaint. Somebody is trying to force their way into your dwelling. If the water services company chooses to say we're not forcibly installing water meters into your dwelling, then what legislation are they referring to or relying upon to fit the water meters in the first place then? Either they are fitting them in dwellings, as this clearly says here, or they are not. That's it from People's Internet Radio News for today, folks. To join the site, get involved, check us out on Facebook. Okay, so you get the idea there, folks. What they're doing is, on Garda Síochána, are being called by the water meter company to attend. Therefore, they're, if you will, they're attending on their behalf. And they're getting to make their complaint to the Gardaí first. Whereas if you're the property owner, the homeowner, the man or woman in the dwelling protected by the Constitution, and it is protected by the Constitution once you put it in place. Did you ever hear the saying, first in line, first in time, first in time, first in line? Something like that, right? You get your complaint in first. Now the Gardaí are attending for you. Now, you might say, oh, Vin, they might just ignore me and blah, blah, blah. And try. Sure, I know. But think about it. They don't have You see, I've heard these arguments, and I see them on Facebook, people saying, but they're fitting that to the public footpath, therefore it's public property, therefore you have no say, yada, yada, yada. That's what the trolls are out there saying to people. I want to arm the people. I want to arm you with good information. better information, more accurate information, and it's simply written in the in the legislation that they're using. They have no legislation to fit anything to public property. The legislation they're using, that they're relying upon, has in dwellings, to fit water meters in dwelling. Now, if they want to say that where they're fitting the water meter is not in your dwelling, fine. Fine. Let's have that out in the courtroom. I wonder, does Ishka Éireann wish to take that issue to court? If anybody from Ishka Éireann, of course, wants to call in and address this, you're more than welcome to. And anybody else wants to call in, of course, 00353144309 if you want to call in. Also, you can add VINCENTTEMP and the digit 1 over Skype. That's Vincent Temp 1, no spaces, lowercase. And that's the digit 1 at the end of, not ONE, digit 1. You know, what? How are they going to address that? How are they going to attempt to address that? Now, if An Garda Síochána don't uphold the Constitution, they know they're in big trouble, because you can take it further. You say, oh, well, great, okay, fine. I need a superintendent. No, he's not playing ball. Fine, you need to kick it upstairs. Eventually, you might end up with the Phoenix Park. But I think what we should also do is, some of us listening here should maybe, during the week, perhaps ring up some of the Pat Kennys and the Ryan Tubertys and the Joe Duffys through the week and say, hey, I found this very strange that the water meter company only have legislation to fit water meters in dwellings. So they don't have any legislation to empower them to fit to public property. I see they're offering that as an argument via An Garda Síochána when they show up. They're letting An Garda Síochána tell people that. Therefore, anybody who has had a water meter fitted forcibly up to now has had this done literally contrary to Bunraig there in 1937. So I suppose we should be ringing some politicians as well and saying, hey, local council, local politician, national whomever you are, hey, how about this? Does the Constitution not matter anymore? Has it been... has it been discarded? You know, did we miss a meeting at all? I mean, it's just, you know, how can you have a national media claiming to call themselves a national media? And here are people operating in a company forcing water meters in dwellings, when clearly the Constitution says, you know, they're not supposed to do that. And they're probably using some nonsense excuse like, well, like the Garda Síochána might be using, like, well, the people never called us and said somebody's breaking into my dwelling, so they didn't enact us or didn't empower us to act for them. We only got a call from the water meter company. I have seen men operating for the water meter company assault people. I've heard the people in their videos make those complaints to the Gardaí. They do nothing. They walk away. Something has to change, folks, and it has to change now. Now, the only way it's going to change if we start telling people this. So, I noticed today in the, I'll get it here, North County Leader, which is a little local newspaper that does the rounds around here. And I saw a little article, I'm just digging, here we go. Excuse the rustling. So if somebody would be good enough, I didn't have a chance to find it yet, but if somebody would be good enough to try and find this group on Facebook for me, that would be fantastic. And the article reads as follows. Local residents object to water charges. I would suggest they probably object to water metering full stop. But however, again, we can't really trust what the journalists try anymore, can we? Unfortunately. A gathering of concerned residents from Skerries, Lochshinny, Rush and Lusk have come together as a non-political unit to protest against water charges that are coming down the line. The group gathered at the Raven Roundabout on the Dublin Road in Lusk on Wednesday 28th of May last, where they were supported by drivers passing by who honked their horns in support of the group's protestations. Speaking to the county leader organiser, Robert Murphy emphasised that the group is not aligned to any political group and they have specifically asked politicians to stay away from their protests. He said, we are a group of ordinary citizens who are opposed to water metering and water taxes. See, right there. The headline doesn't match. Anyway, one of our members started up a Facebook page a few months ago, and he asked me to get involved. We are actively involved for about 3 or 4 weeks, and our aim is to make sure that we can create an active demonstration against water meters being installed, and I want to emphasize that we are in no way political. Our movement is growing every day. At first, it was a little slow to get going, but as you can see from the numbers here today, people are very annoyed about this tax and to water metering. This is our second activity, and we hope to organize at least one every week in different locations. So, if somebody could find out the Facebook group page in relation to that, I'd really appreciate it, because I'll ask them if they want to come on for an interview. Which brings me on to the next thing I want to talk about, non-political. I think I haven't made it clear down through the last few years, but I am non-political, folks. And, you know, any time I talk about sovereignty or legislation, legal stuff, I don't have any political affiliations at all. None. I'm not interested in politics. I have no interest in becoming a politician or anything to do with it. quite frankly, I despise it. I despise it. And, you know, I just want that to be clear to people that, you know, I'm not interested in violence, political or otherwise. And I'm a passive, peaceful man. And I enjoy that. And, therefore, I want to help these groups. I don't care even if some of them do have political persuasions. I want to help them. I want them to hear what I just said to all of you about the water meters, for example. Let them know, look, here's the legislation. Here's the Constitution. Now you tell me, what's wrong? How come nothing is being done? Well, let me explain it to you. The reason nothing is being done is you're not ringing an Garda Síochána, and you're not making the complaint in the right manner. They're pretending, if you will, that because you haven't, that everything's okay, and they're pretending that they're being called out by some company to just somehow, assist a company, a corporation, who are being, abused by the naughty protesters. If the Garda Síochána want the respect of the people, they need to pull their finger out here. If they don't do something, and I mean soon, the people en masse will turn against an Garda Síochána, and I don't think the Garda Síochána want or need that. There's some big changes coming, folks. Big changes coming. And I think they're going to come, they're going to start slow, and it's going to snowball. I mean, I can see it right now. I can see the way things are changing. I can see the way people's attitudes are changing. I can hear me doggies barking outside, so I'm going to play a little song till I bring him in and calm him down. Give me a sec. Tell you what, we'll go with something nice and easy. Haven't heard this one in quite some time. This is Easy Like a Sunday Morning. Remember that one? The Commodores. You can't beat the old Smoochies with Lionel Richie, the Commodores, of course. Easy Like a Sunday Morning. You're listening live to peoplesinternetradio.com, and you can probably hear my dogs slurping up their water in the background there. They haven't quite settled in just yet. We'll give them another few minutes anyway. So, yes, what I'd like to know... by the way, did anybody have any luck finding that Facebook group for me? Anybody? I'm just going to check back through the old chat box there. Not yet. Okay, but if you can, folks, do a little poking around, see if we can locate that chat box, or that Facebook group, rather. And, let's try and do a bit of good and try and spread the word, because I vibe and the doggies saying hello to me, doggies. See, these are the groups of people we're going to be more effective with, I think. Non-political, apolitical, because... How can I put this? Politics is just going to, it's going to spoil whatever good work happens. And I think they've clearly recognized that. Whereas our intention is to come in there, it's just simply to help them figure out the, is that it there, Vibe, is it? Let me just have a look. I think, oh, no. No. Well, thank you for the image, Vibe. Yeah, that's not the one. The Facebook page I'm looking for, SD, is from that article, Rush Lusk Scaries Loch Shinny. Apparently they have a Facebook page against the water meters. And I just want to get in touch with those people and let them know about how the Constitution, the legislation, and their sovereignty will work with simplicity and ease. And again, you know, we need to see, I think we need to see, I hate to use the term victory, but you know what I mean, something along those lines, a win for the people using the Constitution. One of the things I liked when Ben Gilroy put up his video was the original one, Constitution Halts Sheriff. Now, okay, technically it wasn't really the Constitution that halted the sheriff that day, but it sort of did. But I liked the fact that he put it out there to get people familiar with the idea that, yes, there's a Constitution, and yes, you can hold their feet to that fire if you know how to do it. Oh, good man, SD, is that it? Excellent, excellent. Brilliant. That looks like it. Excellent. Good stuff, good stuff. And I see they have, interestingly, they have a triangle with Labour, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and Troika with a red line strike going through it. So, excellent, excellent. Well, I'm going to just type a little message on there. While I'm typing this little message, I'm going to play a little cartoon for you. Okay, I think you get the idea on that. I'm just going to put a quick tune on, folks, because I just want to call Billy Maguire in here now. So give me 2 seconds, and we'll have Billy on the line. Welcome back. We're live on the line again. We have Billy Maguire on the line with me now. Welcome back to People's Internet Radio. Billy, it's a long time since we've had you on, I thought.
Yes. Good evening, Vincent. Good evening to your listeners.
And you can hear me okay now, yeah?
I can indeed.
Excellent, excellent, because Billy is on Skype now, if you want. So...
Modern technology, Vincent, thanks to you.
Well, good stuff. So, I don't know where you want to begin, Billy. Maybe...
Well, I had a very interesting experience during the week, and I think the University of Limerick, it was the Royal Irish Academy, and off the top of my head now, I'm trying to think of get all these things, but it was Richard Bellamy. They brought him to the University of Limerick. And Michael D. Higgins was there as well, and his wife, who I had never met before.
Sabrina.
And all these very celebrity, I'd say, people were there. It was an excellent lecture. It was terrific. I think it was the first time that the Royal Irish Academy, and I think it was Dr. Mary Daly, is the president of it. I didn't get a chance to meet her. And they had, you know, Professor Don Barry, who is the president of the University of Limerick. But I was disappointed in one aspect of it, that first of all, Dr. Mary Daly, she opened the proceedings, it was, and with Michael D. Higgins, but she never mentioned, it was, I believe it was the first time she said that the Royal Irish Academy had been outside Dublin, and she never mentioned the fact that the university was founded, you know, by the Irish Republican Brotherhood as a technological university, and all those factories that were built around the university. I think there's about 375 acres, and it was to educate young people and to give them a sense of work ethos. And I think, you know, you're talking about 1950 when all this idea came about.
On top of that, Billy, let's not forget that anytime anything else has been remembered or recognized, they always mention the source.
And this, I found that very strange, and I found that, you know, I found that upsetting, really. I didn't like that part of it. Now, I must congratulate them. It was very well done. It was in the Medicare Center, apparently, the new buildings. You walk across this little footbridge, which I know a lot. I know that area very well, having grown up there in Willowbank. Mm-hmm. And as you know, it was my family that gave Willowbank for the peace, reconciliation and prosperity process. I mean, that was found there in at that time by the Supreme Council of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And that was predicated on going back to the sovereign constitution and going back to 1922 when everything went wrong. And there was no mention of any of that. And to me, that was the whole essence of the university, why it was founded and why it's for our people are sovereign. Now, he gave a very good lecture, that Richard Bass, and I...
Bellamy, wasn't it?
Yeah, Richard Bellamy.
Yeah, yeah.
What, did I, am I not coming across? Can you hear me?
You are, yes. No, it's fine.
Yeah, Richard Bellamy. And I met him after the event, and I gave him a copy of the Sovereign Constitution and the 1916 Proclamation. And I gave him one of those, you know, the harp badges that we have.
Mm.
And I gave him some shamrock. And I gave him the letter to Martin Schulz that didn't really address about our tricolor flag. And, you know, I didn't meet Michael D. Higgins because, as you know, he doesn't recognize the state and he doesn't recognize the Irish Republican Brotherhood and he doesn't recognize the Constitution. And the question, we weren't allowed to ask any questions, and I thought that was very sad, that an event like that where I would call them the great and the good, you know, judiciary and all those people, they were all there. And I wanted to ask the Irish Republican Brotherhood, we wanted to ask a question that, the question was that in Michael D. Higgins' inaugural speech, he said that the Constitution was 75 years old. And the Constitution was 93 years old then, it's 95 now. And he said that, and Mary McAleese said, you know, when the Queen was here, at Dublin Castle, that the courts are under English common law. And my question to Michael D. Higgins what constitution is he upholding? Because we have five constitutions in the state. We have the Sovereign Constitution, which was written in Vaughan's Hotel and was written for 1916 and was updated and amended for the 32 county election of 1918, and that's the only constitution we have by the will of all the people of Ireland. And then you have the Free State Constitution that was imposed in 1922. It was written in the Shelburne Hotel, and it was imposed by King George V of England as and he imposed a British apartheid system for the 26 and 6 counties of Ireland as an Orange Free State and a provisional government. That's what we have today. And then, on the 21st of January 1919, the Sovereign Constitution was ratified by the will of all the people of Erin, and Dáil Éireann and the Dáil Éireann courts and the War of Independence. That's the mandate that we have, and that's the mandate that I hold as president of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. I hold the 32 county mandate, and Michael D. Higgins, he holds a mandate of the 26 counties that was imposed by King George V in 1922. And in August 1919, King George V, declared that Dáil Éireann was an illegal assembly. And in 1923, he made Dáil Éireann an illegal assembly. So I would like to ask Michael D. Higgins, and I would like to ask the Queen of England, you know, they don't recognize the state, the Sovereign Republic of Erin, or our people. Now, that's the Free State Constitution, and then you have De Valera's 37 Constitution, which again, he wanted to can only be changed in a 32 county referendum, and the British wouldn't allow him to change it. So he rejigged the first Sovereign Constitution, and he a rehash of sort of this in a 26 county election, and that's what you have today. And then you have the British Constitution, which Richard Bellamy spoke very elegantly on, and he was referring. I felt myself. He spoke of sovereignty, and he spoke of the Constitution. I felt myself, he didn't know the difference between sovereignty and royalty. And, you know, it wasn't clear. To us, the people are sovereign. Every child is born sovereign. And that child has a sovereign right to the first elements, earth, air, fire, and water, man's intellect and reason, and his five senses. That's our, and our sovereign Trinity. That's the 12 strings of our sovereign seal. And I said, the harp is the covenant between God and man with all the information, knowledge for his planet Earth and our civilization. And whereas the sovereign seal is Anno Domini 2014, the Book of Psalms is the Psalter, and that's the Psaltery, the instrument that accompanies the Psalms. And everything, all civilization, all religion, comes from the harp. It's man's spirituality and all the strings of the harp. And that's how man created, all these religions, which are actually man-made. They're not God-made. But God, and I said very clearly that the harp is the covenant between God and man with all the information. And if you follow that, the first string is the measuring tape, the plumb line, the straight edge. Excuse me. It is, everything is written in Om, which is the first structured language of mankind. The second is hieroglyphics. Every civilization is all to do with our civilization, and it's all to do with our children. Children are sovereign. And I think that Richard Bellamy, he didn't connect that the whole purpose of all this is that every child is born sovereign. And rather than, the Catholic Church said every child is born with original sin, and if you follow the methods of the Catholic Church, from the cradle to the grave, you get to heaven. Well, I don't know whether that's true or not, but look, we're living here on planet Earth, and I can only tell you what's written in the Om on the harp. And I would ask people to, you hear the harp, and you hear the music of the harp, which is, I think, wonderful, but you must learn to read the harp. You must learn to read how the harp works, and how you create the wheel, how you build your ship. Every structure you want to build comes from the harp.
Well, as I keep saying, Billy, many people have said, the wheel is the greatest invention of mankind, and I say, no, it's a piece of string.
That's exactly what it is, and we're coming up to the summer solstice, and we only had a 6 month calendar. The winter and summer solstice, and was planting after that, and the sonship. I mean, it is the most wonderful instrument. Except we have everything. It's not the crown that is the sovereign; it is the harp, and that's what's important. I didn't think that he quite understood that, but I found him a very congenial person, and I believe he is, and very easy to talk to.
Well, I'd like to put it out there then, Billy, that if he'd like to come on some night for an interview / discussion / whatever, he'd be more than welcome to, and I will send him an email in that regard.
Yes, and I think you should. I found him a very decent fellow and very nice, but I was disappointed that we weren't allowed to ask any questions. I found that very strange, and this is coming apparently from Michael D. Higgins. I found that very strange. Now, I did say afterwards, I did ask the aide-de-camp, very nice, very, very gentlemanly fellow. It was a lovely session, but I think that's what, we want to know where people are getting their sovereign authority from, and we want to know the judiciary were there. They didn't say anything. And how many people went away from that meeting of all these distinguished guests that they had? I don't think it was advertised any place. I don't know. Anyone I spoke to didn't know anything about it. But the only reason I was there because, my father was the founding of that university and the ideas for it. And it was a university for Limerick, Clare and Tipperary because it's just the river. We were actually walked across on that. I think that little footbridge cost $11 million. And it's a beautiful, it goes to the music school and that. But it is the most wonderful university in the way it's built and the way it's set out. And I must say, Ed Walsh, he must take the credit for that. And Chuck Feeney, who learned his duty free from Brendan O'Regan. He was, I think, putting $6 million a year into that. But to me, it was sad. And I'm going to go and talk to,
How were you received, though, yourself, Billy? I mean, as you were meeting people and talking, did they lower the head and turn and go, oh my God, it's McGuire?
Everybody was very courteous, okay. and that. But I mean, I didn't get the chance to ask, and I think that knowledge was missed. Now, before I went into that meeting was at 6 o'clock. You had to be there at 5:45 and in your seat before the president came down and you know. But anyway, I went over to the library and to the archives because, as you have said before in your show, I lived down there and I lived at Willowbank, which was the most beautiful place and beautiful gardens, and they had everything, and it was right on the riverbank. And that was given for the Peace, Reconciliation and Prosperity process, which was founded by the Irish Republican Brotherhood, you know, in 1950. You're talking about 1950. And as a technological university for young people to get a proper education and a proper work ethos, that they could go any place in the world. And I think that was a wonderful, ethos that the Irish Republican Brotherhood have. And Willowbank was given. And I remember, I'm the last member left of the Supreme Council of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, who founded the state between 1917. We bought Vaughan's Hotel for the reorganization of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And then in 1918, the 32 county election of 1918 from there, that's what established the sovereignty of the 32 counties and the democratically elected TDs to Dáil-Éireann. And Dáil-Éireann has to be a 32-county mandate. Michael D. Higgins was never a member of Dáil-Éireann. He's a member of the Royal Dáil and Senator Oireachtas that was imposed in 1922 by King George V, no matter what he says. And I would like him to come out and say where he's getting. And you look at Article 4, the name of the state is ERA. And they're taking it off all our sovereign seats. That's not legal, valid, or
well, again, I was pointing that out the other day when I was demonstrating to people that the legislation that they're using for the water meters, for example, I said, well, initially it's got the sovereign seal up there, but it hasn't got ERA.
If it doesn't have ERA, it's not legal, valid, or bona fides. And I see the same on the Revenue Commissioner sending out income tax and another tax without ERA on it. If it isn't, who are they collecting the taxes for? If ERA isn't on it, it's not part of the state. The state is, the name of the state in Article 4 is ERA. Article 5, Ireland's a sovereign, independent, democratic state, all 32 counties. And that's what's important.
Yes,
it doesn't have ERA on it.
The intention, Billy, was never to form a socialist republic. I wish people would get their head around that. It was to form a sovereign republic.
That's what we are. But if you want to run it as that, and you get the will of all the people of
absolutely
the 32 counties to do it, well, then that's how it's done.
Right, but you can't
as
force
it is
anyone.
Today, but I found that Obama, and he said, was it last Wednesday, I think it was, he was criticizing Crimea, and he was criticizing Russia for annexing Crimea, the will of the people. He talked about sovereignty. Well, isn't that exactly what the Crown, King George V did in 1922? The state was up and running, the Sovereign Republic of ERA. And he wouldn't allow it. He took the sovereignty, which the people here are sovereignty, on himself. And we were only subjects to the Crown. And he annexed the six counties.
And they did it using force. And then they claim we agreed to it, which, of course, we couldn't have agreed to it. The treaty was never ratified.
Of course it was never. And Dáil-Éireann has never voted for the Anglo-Irish Treaty. You see, they switch it. They say, oh, the Dáil. It's the Royal Dáil and Senator Oireachtas. And that's what you have. And that's what I'm saying today. The Royal Dáil and Senator Oireachtas is under King George V. And I gave out about the tricolour flag that Michael D. Higgins took to Windsor. And I was told, oh, we had nothing whatsoever to do with that. It was the Department of Foreign Affairs that put the gold fringe. I said, that's a fourth colour. But that's another way of getting around.
Well, the Department of Foreign Affairs don't have the authority to desecrate the sovereign flag of the Sovereign Republic of Ireland either. I mean, in fact, nobody has.
No, if it is, you're in before the Oglan Éireann Court, and you'll explain yourself under the Sovereign Constitution and the 1916 Proclamation. It makes it very clear for anybody who does anything like that. I mean, that's the reason why General de Gaulle wouldn't allow us to go into the Euro. It was the EEC then and the EU, but because Dáil-Éireann was only a provisional government imposed as a British apartheid system for the 26 and 6 counties of Ireland as an Orange Free State and a provisional government. That's all you have today. And they can lie and have as much propaganda as they like, but I can only tell
which
you the facts.
Which they do.
What?
which they do.
And they don't like me for saying it. And I think that, you know, there was the RTE were there at that event, and there were plenty of photographers. But no one is allowed to come over and talk. I'm not allowed to talk to anybody.
Did that, none of them come near you, no?
No.
And what about, I mean, I don't know how much detail you want to go into, but you did have a good conversation with the president of the provisional government's wife.
I never met the lady before, and I can tell you she is a lady and a very fine person and a very concerned person. And I went up and I greeted her and I told her I was president of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and I was telling her about the university. She was so interested to hear about how it was founded by the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and I was told as a technological university, and as I would, and you know, all those factories that were built around there as to teach young people a work ethos, and they go across to other countries and they come here and we go there. I mean, there were people there, African people there, in their traditional dress. You know, you'd see them out in the plains of Africa, and how well they looked, you know, and being educated there. I thought it was wonderful, you know. But sure, Michael D. Higgins is from Limerick, and I remember Michael D. Higgins when he was out. I knew his aunt and his uncle in Newmarket and Fergus very well, and his brother, they were out there. And his father was a very much strong Republican person, you know, in the War of Independence and all that, and gave his life. And he suffered a lot. He had a very ill health towards the end of his life. But I don't see why, you're the president when he comes down, or he has the mandate, but, usurpation.
Well, he has a mandate, Billy, from a people who don't fully understand not only the mandate they gave him, they don't understand that he is accepting a mandate of a lesser situation, yes, and he's not supposed to. So, not only do the people who voted not fully understand what they did, but he knows damn well what they did.
He knows.
So there's a deception, and it's dishonest.
He's a very bright man, and he's in politics all his life.
Oh, he's an incredible... look, anybody who underestimates that man is going to be sorry. He's a very clever man.
It's just that he won't recognise the state as founded by the Irish Republican Brotherhood. I mean, to say in his inaugural speech that the Constitution was 75 years old when it was 93 years old, and then he won't recognise the flag. And in fact, if you watch very carefully, and I believe what they said, was that it's the Department of Foreign Affairs that have nothing to do with the tricolour flag. Now, that tricolour flag is belong to the Irish Republican Brotherhood, who keep that in trust.
Well, on top of that, the Taoiseach's office apparently is supposed to understand and know and explain to everybody the protocols in relation to the national flag as well.
But he doesn't do it.
No.
I mean,
no.
He just sent it off to Jimmy Deanan. Jimmy Deanan ignores the Irish Republican Brotherhood. He doesn't want to know anything about us. We're snubbed on every occasion, and as you know. For Easter Sunday, when they commemorated, the provisional government commemorated, they came down, the Defence Forces came down with our tricolour flag, and they read our proclamation, and we had to wait for an hour and a half until they finished the dignitaries finished their lunch before we could lay our wreath at the GPO and read our proclamation and hold our tricolour flag. And as you know, when we went to the Mansion House on the 21st of January, we weren't allowed into the Mansion House by Oisin Quinn, the Lord Mayor, because he was a member of the Bar Council and he is prohibited from reading the proclamation and the Sovereign Constitution. And I knocked at that door and we were told no. And then I knocked on the door again before we left. I told them, I said, take down our tricolour flag. That's a desecration of our sovereignty. And I think it's going to be very interesting to know on next year, on the 21st of January, is the Lord Mayor, who represents the citizens of Dublin, and represents the Dublin City Council, and isn't the Dublin City County Council as well the representing? Aren't they all the one body now? And who gave them? Why aren't they complying with the protocol for the tricolour flag and for the 1916 proclamation? They're in denial of that. And I found that very offensive of Labour. You know, Labour, and we spoke about it, the Labour, James Connolly, it was in deference to James Connolly, who was a member of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, that Vaughan's Hotel was entrusted to them. And what did they do? They cut it, and they didn't. They want. They have never come to terms with, you know, the green flag that the Citizens' Army had. They regarded that as their flag.
Yeah.
And that was captured by the Crown of England.
Well, I don't know if you saw this article in the Irish Times. Christy Burke elected Lord Mayor of Dublin, and elected, seemingly. Sinn Féin to hold position for 1916 centenary after negotiating left-wing ruling coalition. This is in the Irish Times. Sinn Féin will hold the position of Lord Mayor of Dublin for the 1916 centenary commemorations after negotiating a left-wing ruling coalition on Dublin City Council, a planned arrangement whereby the position would rotate between the five largest groupings on the council collapsed after Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil pulled out of negotiations. Instead, Sinn Féin, the largest party on the 63-seat council with 16 seats, has entered into coalition with Labour, the Green Party, and 11 independent councillors. The agreement will see Sinn Féin holding the mayoralty, is that how you pronounce it, for two separate terms, with the independents also holding it twice and Labour once. So that begs the question, Billy, what's going to happen on the 24th of January?
Isn't it going to be amazing to know?
Now, on top of that, how is it possible? I mean, they're just announcing that now in the newspapers. And how is it possible that we were able to predict that that's exactly what was going to happen 2.5-3 years ago?
Yes, and but the point now will be with the new Lord Mayor is how he's going to, is he going to recognise the Irish Republican Brotherhood? Isn't it a dreadful thing to say is to have to, that the facts are that the provisional government don't recognise the state? Isn't that an awful thing to? They only recognise what was imposed by King George V in 1922.
Well, I think it tells everybody the story that I've been telling them and you've been telling them, and that it backs it up completely. And all the people who believe the propaganda, the facts don't back up the propaganda.
No.
You know, the so-called Anglo-Irish Treaty does not meet the terms, as I said, of an international treaty, because it wasn't signed even on this soil, Billy.
Not at all.
I was talking.
Dáil Éireann has never taken part in that. Dáil Éireann has never sat in Leinster House.
No.
It is the Roy Dáil and Senator Rochtas that approved of it.
Well, I think people need to understand. Can we go back to that point a little? Because let's just go through it slowly for some, say, for the foreign people who are listening who might not fully understand Irish history. There was a time in Irish history when we, the people, all came together and we formed a sovereign government for the entire island of Ireland.
That's exactly
the
it.
Crown did everything it could to smash and break it, and eventually it broke it in some ways, but not in all ways. This is important to remember, because it was never dissolved, Billy. The people never had a 32 county election mandate or anything of that nature to dissolve it, and in fact,
no.
To even attempt to do so would have been considered treason.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So what happened was, effectively, the Crown managed to get some of the Irish plenipotentiaries over there and accepted their signature as if it was a signature that had the power to compel and obligate every man, woman and child on the soil over here. And they simply did not have that power because they came from a sovereign republic. And in a sovereign republic, my signature cannot obligate you, Billy.
No. You're the sovereign. Simple. That's what people under... And that's I felt that Richard Bellamy, he didn't understand that point. He was talking about sovereignty, he was talking about constitution freedom. It was all about Europe, of course, because he's got the big job in Europe now, you know.
Right.
But he didn't understand, to him, and being an English professor, I felt, you know, they're subjects to the Crown. But he was talking about the British constitution, which was very interesting. But he didn't understand that here it's the people are sovereign. Every child is born sovereign. And that's what is an absolute scandal to me, to see what's going on in Tuam and going on in those awful industrial schools. I mean, they were imposed, and I mean, they were scandal. And that was the Free State government imposed by King George.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because that's what happened, folks, in the Constitution Room in the Shelbourne Hotel. The Vatican had their say on that 1922 Free State Constitution too, did they not, Billy?
They did, of course, and that's where it was coming from. And it was all to do with a Catholic country. But to us, the government, every child is born sovereign. And I think the more people, you see, all these corporations are taking over now. And they all have to have a license. That's the important point. But the licenses belong to the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and that's held in trust for the sovereign citizens. And a license is only valid from the 21st of January to the 20th of January each and every year. So if a corporation doesn't comply with that, you they don't have the license. You withhold the license. And that's what's happening. And I think that's why the people in the six counties of Northern Ireland are so, it makes it so important for them, because that's how they will control these corporations. And if you take our territory and everything we have, I saw the other day when I was going into to the university on Friday, it came out in the news that there was a corporation trying to take over the seaweed of from Mayo, Clare and Limerick, I suppose, and down to Kerry, and sell it to Canada. How can they do that? That's belong to the citizens. That's part of our sovereignty. And where were they going to get the license from? Sure, we talked about the GA and the medal and everything else, that they changed the medal. They made it from a national organization in 2008 to a corporate body. And they didn't tell anybody. You can't do things like that, you know. And I think it's time, it's until the people start standing up and going into court and asking the judge, as I said, that question I asked Michael D. Higgins, that we had five constitutions. And I mean, I don't know what I said about the last one was the European Constitution. And you have a right to know under which constitution your case has been heard. Or if you will get a summons to attend the court, and do it properly, write to the court clerk beforehand and ask him what constitution. And the only one that we recognise is the sovereign constitution by the will of all the people. It's on it.
Well, there's a question, Billy, in the chat box, and I think it's a significant question from Paddy Mackey. He said, but the delegation that went to Britain, he's talking about the plenipotentiaries, didn't they just agree to reach some type of agreement? And then did the actual agreement not get reached, as it were, in Dáil Éireann? That's his question.
It didn't get reached in Dáil Éireann because Dáil Éireann is prohibited. Michael Collins had already stepped down from the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and so had De Valera. That Dáil Éireann is still there. That is the sovereign government. And if you read the sovereign constitution, you can't even put that before the citizens to even vote on. You can't give a sovereignty. You should distinguish between sovereignty and constitution. You can change the constitution by a 32 county vote, but you can never change the sovereignty. And those volunteers that gave their lives, that are up in Arbor Hill and in Glasnevin, that was sovereignty, is what they achieved. And I am very annoyed by the fact that the Sovereign Trinity, if anybody wants to go into billymaguire.com or into the Irish Republican Brotherhood.ie and to see the official site of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and I'll just, 1 second, and I'll just take it down here now.
Okay. And I'll just put in the chat box there if anybody wants to call in, 3-3-4-3-3-0-9.
Back again.
No problem.
It's a beautiful, it's the tricolour flag with air on it in the Om. And it has the sovereign seal and the harps on it. That's the sovereign trinity, with the green, white and orange flag on a blue background, which is St. Patrick's blue or Ayrshire blue. And underneath that is the official website of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And the first they have on it is the GPO, and then you have the 1916 proclamation. And then you have Vaughan's Hotel, where the state was founded by the and Oglan Aherne, that's where it was. And let us say that Sinn Féin was the political wing of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and Oglan Aherne was the military wing of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And that's what makes it legal, valid, and bona fide, is it has to be made. And then you have the Sovereign Constitution of 1918, written in Vaughan's Hotel and updated and amended, which needs to be updated and amended today, and it isn't done. And then you have the Mansion House, where the first Dáil Éireann sat on the 21st of January 1919, and where the Sovereign Republic of Éire was ratified. by the will of all the people, and where Dáil Éireann and the Dáil Éireann courts and the War of Independence were ratified. And that's the mandate that I hold as President of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And I'm the last member left of the Supreme Council of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And I worry what's going to happen to the state and to our citizens when I'm gone. Who's going to take up that mantle and carry on? And when you see, I mean, there was a perfect example on Friday, when there could be a huge discussion there. You had all these intellectual people there, you know, who understood. I mean, you had, very senior people at that. Now, there was no mention of it any place. And,
well, isn't this the thing now, Billy, that when they all meet now, they all kind of, it's not quite a wink and a nudge, but
it is.
Sort of is in many regards, because they all know nobody's going to mention the elephant in the room.
That's the point, and that's the point that needs to be mentioned, because then they can say, oh, well, we had a very good convention, whatever they like to call it, down at the University of Limerick, which was very well attended, and we had Professor Richard Bellamy, who's the leading constitution, I suppose, and it's EU, I'm trying to find out the name of it exactly, but I don't know, but anyway... He's representing the European Union now on that, and great man. But as far as we're concerned, it's the people are sovereign. That's where everything we have is predicated on that, and that's why in 1917 we purchased Vaughan's Hotel, we put our hand in our pocket for set up in Dáil Éireann and the Dáil Éireann courts, and we helped in the War of Independence, and that's where the legality and the sovereignty. You have to have legitimacy, and that's what's lacking in you said about Sinn Féin or the but Sinn Féin won that 1918-32 county election, but what they seem to be lacking is sovereignty and legitimacy. They don't seem to talk about that at all. And, those questions have to be asked. Where are we going? And I think we have a wonderful opportunity between now and 2016 to put all those right. But they'll never be right if the people don't stand up and ask the right questions, because all you're going to get is propaganda and lies. Make them answer the question. And where are you getting your sovereign authority from? And if you get something from the civil servants demanding you tax or evicting you out of your house, and the sovereign seal of 12 strings, the Christian symbol in each of us. Well, now, when I say Christian, it's not Roman Catholicism Christian, it's a different, it's the old Celtic Christianity, where every child is born sovereign, and God and the sovereignty. And when you get that, you have to insist that... the sovereign seal is on it. If it wasn't on your passport, where would you go? And you see the tax for your car. It has to be on that. And your driving license. And every other official document. And how is it there? Why are they leaving that off? When, if I get an income tax form from the revenue commissioners, and the error isn't on it under the sovereign seal, ask the question, who am I paying this tax to? I'm not... Because the name of the state is Article 4. The name of the state is error. And who are they collecting the money for? Aren't you entitled to know that?
Well, if you don't know that, you're nothing more than a slave. And that's what's happened, Billy. Everybody's been enslaved. I mean, that's why I was talking about the water meters there earlier.
I heard you on that. And as you know, we rang up and we asked about where their license was.
Now, that video...
And they haven't got one.
That video had 5,800-odd views, and then YouTube removed it. So I put it back up again, just so you know.
They're always removing anything we say. But, I mean, the point is, then isn't it better to come out with your hands up and tell the citizens the truth?
Well, there's another page I was telling you about earlier on Facebook, and it's called Campaign to Have a Secular Irish Constitution. So I've invited them on for an interview to see if they're prepared to have a chat. Because I want to try to get to the bottom of this with a lot of groups. There's a lot of constitutional groups out there, and I want to ask them the question, well, okay, if you want a secular constitution, why? I want to explain to me, well, what is the source of sovereignty for you?
That's the point. That's the important. Why is your all this is why? Where's the crown? It's not the crown that is the sovereign. It's the harp. Where is the people are subjects to the crown, and they can be sent to war as they were. They can be enslaved and everything. When you are the sovereign, you can't be enslaved and you can't be sent to war, and you have a right to education and to look after your family. That's what it's about. And look after planet Earth, the four elements: earth, air, fire, and water. They're yours. And that's what's important when you ask those questions. Sorry, Vincent.
No, you're fine. I was just typing something there into the chat box, just trying to put the dots on the i's and the strokes on the t's. It's just when somebody would come looking for a license, it's the people that grant the license, not the IRB. But you would
that's
have
exact. We only hold it in trust for you, for the sovereign government. That's we all we do. We keep that tricolour flag for you. We keep all the sovereign seals and harps, everything, the constitution, the proclamation. They're all yours. Every acre land of the country is belong to the citizens of Ireland. It's on the constitution and there alone. That's what you voted on in 1918, and that got still there, valid today.
Now you see the point. I think that point in time is worth talking about, Billy, because when the so-called treaty was being signed, as you say, Collins was no longer. Well, he stepped down, and the position. The position at that moment in history, correct me if I'm wrong, was that the doll, I'm going to call it the Mansion House doll, right, to locate it.
Well, you have to call it, if the Mansion House, you have to call it Dáil Éireann.
Right, so Dáil Éireann.
To be a member of Dáil Éireann, you must remember, when you hear Dáil Éireann, and you'll hear it thrown in by various Civil War parties now, when you say Dáil Éireann, you have to have a 32-county mandate.
Yes, but of course, Dáil Éireann. They're now, because of their
usurpation. And the Royal Dáil and Senator Rocks is 26. That's the difference. And that's what De Valera was using, the mandate of the first and second Dáil Éireann.
Right, well, even that term, the first and second Dáil Éireann. See, I think that's what people even need to understand, what the difference was between the first Dáil Éireann and the second Dáil Éireann.
Well, that's when the second Dáil Éireann was, and then it moved after that, 1922, it was imposed by King George V in Leinster House, and that's where Leinster House is today, and that's why they can't use, you see, there, it's actually treason for them to put the sovereign seal, and to put up the tricolour flag. That's why they're trying to swap and change, and put a gold fringe on it, which makes it a fourth colour, you know?
And of course, you see, I mean, I've often said to people, correct me if I'm wrong, Billy, but you will stand there and you will read the proclamation in a heartbeat, and I've seen you do so, but there is no way you will ever see a 26-county president utter one word from the proclamation, let alone read the whole thing.
You couldn't, Vincent, because they would be indicted for treason. That's why, and I think it came out on Friday, that they had nothing to do with the tricolour going to Windsor and the fringe put on it, because it's a fourth colour they took. And that's how they're getting away with that. And Eamon Gilmore was over that, and Eamon Gilmore should be asked about that. As you know, he won't speak to us either. He ignores the Irish Republican Brotherhood. He won't speak to us under any circumstances. And neither would Jimmy Dean. And yet you'll see our tricolour flag every time you see a minister, a provisional minister in his office, he has the tricolour and he has the European flag beside it. The European flag is not.
Well, effectively, what they're doing is they're lying. They're lying to Europe as well, Billy. They're actually lying to the Europeans. If the European nation states that are dealing with them don't fully realise, then they're actually lying to them.
And not only that, Vincent, you saw, and you had it up on the website, you showed me, and you saw our sovereign seal being used by, we were told, the Taoiseach. Well, he's only a provisional Taoiseach. Mm. That is absolute treason. There's only person that can use the sovereign seal is the President of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, who has the mandate of the 32 counties. And to do that to that country that came in, the 27th country, was used to do that, and nobody was told here anything about it. Should that country, it makes that country, that's illegal and fraudulently being used for that country. So that country is not a member of the European Union, the 27th country, because it was fraudulently used, the sovereign seal, by I believe it was Enda Kenny, but you can check that, or whoever wants to check
it. No, I think you're correct, yeah.
up on that website. You know, he has no right whatsoever to use the sovereign seal of Dáil Éireann. He's not a member of Dáil Éireann. He's a member of the Royal and Senator Oireachtas is what he was under King George V. Dáil Éireann, that's the mandate we were given in 1918, was the 32 counties. And you hear people talking about, the six counties is British. The 32 counties, and you should name them out, they're all part of the Sovereign Republic of Éire, and that's what it is. And when that Richard Haass tried to find out about the tricolour and the flags and all this, sure, he once the Irish Republican Brother, that flag, how can they sort it out?
Well, unless you again, ask the Irish Republican Brother. It begs the question, Richard Haass, what's his name? Haass, isn't it?
Yes. He's another Dr. Richard Haass. But sure, he wasn't able to sort out about... How can you just ignore the Irish Republican Brotherhood? Stand there
Well,
and
I think people need to know this, Billy. Richard N. Haass is president, in 2005, president of the Council on Foreign Relations, and states in the future... I'm just going to read this for you verbatim. Hold on, I'll get the link here now. Special report, Sovereignty, by Richard N. Haass. Okay, now wait till you hear this. Oh, where's it after going now? I had it there, now I've lost it. Oh, I have to go back, hang on. Here we go. Sovereignty, the notion that government... Why is that happening? Oh, I know what's happening. Hang on, I have to do a screen capture on that page because there's something else jumping on over me. Sorry, just go ahead there yourself, Billy, for a sec, just to like, get this sorted. Hang on. Can you just talk a little more on... I want people to be absolutely clear as to what happened in relation to the treaty, because this is the one thing I keep saying to people, that when they came back, they didn't come back to the Mansion House, Dáil Éireann.
No.
They went to Leinster House.
That's where Leinster House is the Royal Dáil and Senator Oireachtas imposed in 1922 by King George V as a British apartheid state for the 26 and 6 counties of Ireland, not Éire, Ireland, and a provisional government. That's what it is. And I remember, you know, the very same as they did in South Africa, the very same as they did all over the world, and to divide and rule. But how could they do that when you talk, and when they criticise Russia for doing the same thing in Crimea? They did the very same thing in 1922. And Obama said, you know, he made a big speech, and you have it because you download. I read the paper on Thursday, and there was no mention of the fact that that's a sovereign state. And they went in and they annexed that, they said, and... Wasn't that we were a sovereign state? All our government offices were up on the 21st of January 1919. We were a sovereign, independent, democratic state on 21st of January 1919, 1920, 1921, and right up to 1922, when King George V, he usurped the sovereignty of the citizens who were sovereign. And kept it for himself.
Well, I'm after getting this now. Where did you hear this from? Richard Haass. This is the guy who everybody was saying, he's a great man for sorting out what's going on up in the north of Ireland. This is his words. Sovereignty. The notion that governments are free to do what they want within their own territory has provided the organising principle of international relations for more than 350 years. 35 years from now, sovereignty will no longer be sanctuary. Powerful new forces and insidious threats will converge against it. Nation states will not disappear, but they will share power with a larger number of powerful non-sovereign actors than ever before, including corporations, non-governmental organizations, terrorist groups, drug cartels, regional and global institutions, and banks and private equity funds. Sovereignty will fall victim to the powerful and accelerating flow of people, ideas, greenhouse gases, goods, dollars, drugs, viruses, emails, and weapons within and across borders. That's his opinion.
And that's what you're going to get. Now, and you are going to be subject to
Well, it begs the question, Billy. Who in their right mind would think Richard Haas, that man who wrote that, who would in their right mind think he was the right man for the job to sort out what was going on up there
but
at the time?
I heard, Vincent, today, I was listening about Scotland, you know, they said, well, Scotland, when it goes independent, they were talking about London being independent and all this, and the union and dividing all that. But and they said, well, what about America? Well, they said, you know, England has always been a great friend of America. And not only has it all been a great friend of America, Britain regards America, the people in America, as subjects to the Crown of England, and always did. And but he said anyway, Salmon said that, well, of course, Scotland will be a great friend of America too. And what about Ireland? Aren't we a great friend of America? And all they're doing is letting us down on every occasion. I mean, if you interfered, one thing you won't do, you will not trespass into the sovereignty of the United States of America.
Oh, none. Well, in fact, you can, actually, because
they won't uphold our sovereignty.
Well, they're under the crown. Huh? They're still under the crown's sovereignty.
Well, of course they are.
I mean, this is what
that's the way Britain regards them, as under the crown.
Absolutely.
And if American, they nearly lose their life. They won't face facts.
This is why in an American courtroom, Billy, if you mention the Constitution, the judges will tell you mentioned that again and I'll jail you. I'll have you for contempt.
Yeah, but that's why I'm telling you, you do your business properly. You go to the court dark, you say to him, look, when my case comes up, I want it held under the sovereign constitution, and I'm informing you now. And when you go into court, the judge has no option, only to hear it under the sovereign constitution, because that's a legal valid, it's the only legal valid and bona fide constitution we have. I've just named the five of them, and there's one of them, that's the only legal valid. The others are all imposed by King George V, or by the European Union, or by the British government, or, you know, and that's what, people have to sort that out. You have, don't do it for, you're doing it for your own children. Don't you want your own children to be sovereign? And that's what's so important. It's your children and your grandchildren, and you're reneging on them. That's what you're doing. And it's not complicated at all. It's very simple. But you do it yourself. You don't need to be running to your politician. You don't need to run to solicitors or lawyers or all that. You stand up. You're the sovereign. They're not. You are.
Exactly.
And it's time you learned how to do it. Vincent, have I overstayed my welcome?
Not at all, but if you need to sign off, that's no problem.
No, but I do... I do think, and I do, and I would like to ask people, I would like to ask GAA players, I've been asking you, as you know, we have a beautiful set of medals that people donated, the silver and gold, and we have a wonderful goldsmith, and he made a beautiful, you can see those on that BillyMcGuire.com as well, I'm told.
Yep.
And the Sam McGuire and the Liam McCarthy and the GAA was the backbone of our independence, and I think there's a scandal that those players who give so much of their time and dedication are being betrayed. It's not an All-Ireland medal that the GAA, because as we said in 2008, they took it from a national organisation to a corporate body, and they didn't tell anybody. And you see the two medals, they're side by side up on that site, and they have to get an All-Ireland medal. That was your proof since 1910 that you won that. And, I mean, that's a very treasure. That's the highest accolade that the state, the sovereign Republic of Ira can give. And you see that tricolour flag that they have at all the matches. You know, that tricolour flag is not only the national flag. It is the flag of the sovereign Republic of Ira. And it was never captured by anybody. That's what's important. We talked about the green flag, and that was captured by the British forces, and Labour have never come to terms with that, and there's this division all the time, and they despise the tricolour flag because they think that their flag was captured. There's photographs of it. You have a Vincent photographs of that.
Yep.
But nobody has ever captured. That's what people need to know. Nobody has ever captured the tricolour flag. It was brought over here, as you know, by John Francis Marr. And you know that he had the yellow, the orange yellow to the pole. And then it was ratified on the 21st of January under that 32, that the green was nearest.
Well, that's the point I make regularly, Billy, that people need to figure that out and realise that when you say that it's the flag of the Irish Republic of Brotherhood and the Sovereign Republic of Ira, that was the date that it became such. the 24th of January at noon.
Yes, that was important. And it was very important. It was Dermot Lynch was the man, he was the last man to leave the GPO, and he carried that, and he left it. And that flag was kept in Vaughan's Hotel until the 21st of January 1919, and it was under that mandate of the 32 Con. What more could they do? That's the mandate that we were given, the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And I'll forget, and you, another point on that is important to say it too, Vincent. You know, our members up in Arbor Hill, we weren't even allowed to go and visit them, with the judiciary and the provisional government went up, and they had the defence forces there and our flag, and they had wonderful we're snubbed again and treated with total contempt.
Well, listen, Billy, if they had their way, they'd only have the Euro flags flying.
Oh, that's all. But the Crown of England, people must understand that. Why were all those people executed in 1916? They were all Irish Republican Brotherhood. They were the leaders of the state, the Sovereign Republic, and Britain executed every one of them.
That's why,
and
when
they
would
still execute every one of them if they could.
Exactly.
And that's where all that comes from. And people must understand that for 2016. But when I see the likes of Jimmy Deanhan snubbing us and refusing even to talk to us, And Enda Kenny the same way. He's the Minister for Defence, the Provisional Minister of Defence now. And reading our proclamation and using our tricolour without even the courtesy of the protocol for the tricolour flag. And bungled it up with the European flag in his office. I mean, we had all that with Alan Chatter. And we had all that about the sovereign seals and the courts and all that. And they got away with it. They're still getting away with it, but it's the people are paying for it. I mean, I've never seen it. Surely, if you're a sovereign and you're living in the sovereign republic, you should have some sort of benefit. I mean, that's the whole purpose of living in these other countries. They benefit from the assets of the state. And here's the next one coming up, that we're selling all the seaweed now to some. Who's selling it?
I've often said it, Billy. They will get to the stage where they will literally scrape the soil from the land and leave us on a barren rock.
That's exactly what they're doing. But I blame the people for not standing up. You're educated now, and you have that internet, which I've only just learned to use it, Vincent. But, I mean, that was the whole purpose of setting up the University of Limerick, that young people could educate themselves and get the facts out there. And the only reason that it's working is that in all that information is available now. And you're putting out, you're the only one that's putting out the facts. And that's all you need to the facts. How can you make a valid judgment if you don't have the facts?
Well, it's impossible.
It's impossible.
When I'm on here, Billy, I'm saying to people, look, I'm not trying to tell you what to do. I'm not even telling people what I'm doing. I just want people to know that there's another side to this, and there's information that's been hidden from you, and perspective that's been hidden from you, and ancient knowledge and ancient wisdom. And it's not just the Irish people's ancient knowledge and wisdom. It's your right to this knowledge and information as a living man or woman on this land we call the Earth. It's everyone's entitlement, Billy.
But that's it, Vincent. I mean, it is. People have to start and have to stand up. If you don't do it for yourself, do it for your children and your grandchildren. And isn't that the greatest gift you're going to give them? And if you read out, which I've read out many times, Dermot Lynch's book and that page, and it was by Irish Republican Brotherhood methods that we're going to achieve our independence. And sure, and that you'd get some benefit from living here rather than be just an object to be taxed on every occasion.
Well, wasn't it John Burton recently said something that, a people, what was she saying? She said a country or something is more than just its economy. I mean, to hear her utter words like that is an absolute disgrace, because they don't, that's not what she believes. They believe the absolute opposite.
But Vincent, haven't we have lost the art of living. you know, people didn't have a lot before, but they knew how to live.
Well, if I was to say to you, Billy, how many people do you think, if I was to take the people out of Dublin City right now and land them in a lush countryside with plenty of critters and plantation, you know, how many people would survive?
Yeah, that's it.
It'd be a fraction. It would be a fraction of them.
Yeah, yeah. That's the way we're going. Unfortunately, exactly. We should understand, we should look after planet Earth, and we should know how to grow crops. We should know, we have had that for generations. People knew how to use land properly, how to use water properly. You know, they might have had a lot, but they had great common sense. And they were very practical people. And we seem to have lost that.
Well, that was you sent me a fantastic book, Billy. The Outside Gourmet, I think it was it? How to survive on the land, how to cook and live and eat.
At this hour of the night.
I can't remember the name of the book, but it was a fantastic book. I put my hands with there.
But anyway, listen. Thank you for having me on, and just that I was interested on Friday, and I thought, you know, it was a wonderful event to have, but nobody seemed to know anything about it, and you know, such an opportunity there, and to lose that opportunity. I mean, the Aidicon there, I said to him about, you know, the buttons, eight strings, IV, Irish Volunteers, and, you know, the tricolour flag, and that's, you know, David Lynch taking it down, and, you know, that's... But to see people using that flag, I mean, these people who are trying to pretend...
This is it. They're trying to tell the Defence Forces that that's Roman numerals.
Well, they call themselves PD4 now, because the eight strings IVs, not Irish Volunteers.
They think that the IV... They've been told IV. They've been lied to. They've been told the IV is a Roman numerals.
Yeah. It's just... It's IV, Irish Volunteers, Ogden Ahern. And the political wing... was Sinn Féin, and that's how they achieved it. Of course, Sinn Féin wouldn't sit in Leinster House because it was under King George V, and the mandate they were given was a 32-county mandate.
They're in there now, Billy.
What?
They're in there now.
They are, but I mean, they have to have it. You have to be governed by a sovereign government. You can't be governed by a provincial government.
Need to understand, Billy, that the reason you'd have a sovereign government, folks, is with a sovereign government, you're not ruled by a sovereign government. You work in harmony with a sovereign government. And if they're getting too much for you, you can tell them, get out of my life, and you can go back to just being sovereign in your own right. That's the point.
But they're giving themselves huge salaries and expenses and money for them all the time, and nothing for the sovereign's citizens. I mean, they're literally just enslaving them. And if you put your head above the parapet, you just get absolutely clobbered. And that's it. But anyway, hopefully that people will come together and stand together. And I think, you know, the first, to me, this summer, the first would be the GA medal, you know, the Sam Maguire, and you see the attendance at that, and I think it is an absolute scandal.
Well, just on that, you know, I did come across something kind of humorous, and I was going to read these out, but I'll read them out while you're here. The hurling made its debut on Sky Sports yesterday, apparently, or was it the day before, and many viewers watching it from Britain for the first time were amused and confounded in equal measure, apparently. I just have some Twitter comments that they made from David Rice. Watching the hurling on Sky, how feckin' mad do you have to be a goalkeeper in this game? Paul L, this is my new favourite sport. Joe Doyle, watching a bit of this hurling looks like a scrap down the pub. watching this Irish hurling on Sky Sports confirms my belief that the Irish are mental. That's from Santa Last. Hurling on Sky, brilliant idea, superb combination of skill and violence. I think people think hurling, they must think hurling is a violent game. It's not.
That's so skillful. It is the best game on.
I loved it. I mean, that's Billy. When I was, you know, that was my sport, the hurling. I loved it. I went everywhere with the hurling.
But Joe Vincent, I mean, I'm all for that going worldwide, but the GAA is a big enough organisation to have their own television and their own radio program to send that worldwide. What are they going around giving it to Sky Sport? They should be doing it themselves. That's what I'm saying.
Well,
and
you know
they
what?
Haven't
it's,
got.
But it's going to bite them in the
second now.
It's going to bite them in the ass.
GA license. They do not have a license, and they went off then when as you know what happened last year in America, they hadn't the license. That the GA was founded by the Irish Republican Brotherhood. Michael Cusick was only fronting for the GA. That's the front for the Irish Republican Brotherhood on that for the. It's not. It's owned and it was founded by the Irish Republican. It's their organisation. The Sam Maguire, the Lee McCarthy, and that medal are Irish Republican Brotherhood. And that's why we went to all the trouble and asked everyone to donate the gold and the silver, and they did. And we have. They made a beautiful set for Clare and for Dublin, as we hope to present. But every time we're trying to do it, we get knocked down by the GA. We go to the county board and say, God, we never knew that or this. But they have no license to, they have to have a license for Sky Sport to take it. And they hadn't got the license. So what did they do? They took it into the Royal Dáil and Senator Oireachtas committee to rubber stamp it because Sky said they couldn't, they had to have something. I said, that's no more legal, valid, or bona fides. And what about those players? Were they asked anything about this? No.
Nope.
Like, we know better. We'll do it, and we know best. But it's all about money in the
end.
Well,
again, the GAA, they lord it over the players, and that's the other thing. You know, they have to, the players themselves need to pull their finger out, Billy, and they need to come on the pitch one day and say, I'm not hitting that ball. No one's hitting that ball until somebody puts the sovereignty back on the medal. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, look, it the last medal was in 2007. And as you know, the University of Limerick in 2008, they commemorated. And there was a lot of pressure that we wouldn't commemorate it, the 150th anniversary of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And we were in the John Holland Theatre. You know the famous, he invented the submarine, which was the Fenian Ram, you know, and all that. It was wonderful. But we had our, in the Jim Kemmy Business School, is where the GA we had there, and we had there with Brian Cody down, who gave a wonderful lecture. But not one person in that audience, including Brian Cody, knew that the GA had changed the medal, and it was only a GA medal. A GA medal is nothing. What you need is the sovereign seal and era. And it's like your passport. If you went up to the passport with just an old piece of paper and said to the fella, I'm coming into your country, you wouldn't be long turned away, would you?
No.
And who gave them permission to? That's treason what they did. And now they're trying to send it worldwide on Skype, or not Skype, but Sky.
Well,
Sky.
As I said, I'm thinking, well, I always look for the good in these things, Billy, and I'm thinking, well, if that's what they're doing, well, brilliant, because when it comes round that the players do eventually say, I'm not hitting the ball, then it's going to get international recognition. So I think they've shot themselves in the foot.
Well, yeah, there is a God there, I'm always saying, you know, to people. And it's like, you know, in 2008 when I wrote to Nicky Brennan about taking it off and all that, and the GA said, no, it's only, you know, that's, nothing will ever happen. No. I said, you know, every time, in 1155, when Pope Adrian IV, he robbed it and gave it to Henry II to build his empire. You know, it caused the Hundred Years' War, and they had to take down the fleur-de-lis. They had to take it. But our sovereign seal was left up, you know, still up at the Crown of England. And as you saw, for the opening of Parliament the other day, I looked at it, and on every one of their symbols and everything else, you had the Maid of Erin sovereign seal, which is our sovereign seal as well. But up in the Union Jack was taken down for Parliament, and the coat of arms, excuse me, with the harp in it was put up, because it's the harp that is the sovereign, not the crown. And when the Queen left the Parliament, the Union Jack was put back up again, and the coat of arms with the harp on it was taken with the Queen. It always travels with the Queen, or the head of state. But it is the harp that is the sovereign, and that's what's important, with all the knowledge and information. You know.
Well, look, I think people need to understand what exactly that means, Billy. What that means, folks, is that without that information, without that knowledge, you become a beast of burden. That's all.
That's exactly the point. And that's what's so important, and that's what we were under Britain.
Because that's what defines us as men, that we have knowledge and reason and intellect.
It's all about your being and your five senses, and we've quoted it again. The first four strings are earth, air, fire, and water, man's intellect and reason, and his five senses. And we have the sovereign trinity. The Queen has only nine strings up in that. But a very important point on all that is, when you're looking at those, it's to be able to read the harp. And the reading of the harp is what it actually does. It's your measuring tape, your plumb line, your straight edge, your abacus, how latitude and longitude, the sundial, the compass, the wheel. Everything is on that, and that's where man's intellect comes from. And that's what your being is. That's what your being is being governed by. And that's where all the knowledge comes from.
There was one other thing, Billy, if I can just squeeze this in before you go, just a tiny one. I was explaining to the guys today up at the meetup that the Magna Carta was signed on the island of Runnymede, and I found the clip in David Letterman's. And I mentioned it to you too, because
that's right.
Down in Askeaton, they had their Hellfire Club on the island, and they seem to
that's
do
right.
specific things on islands.
That's
and
it.
I looked at the map to locate where the island of Runnymede was, and I can see where Windsor is and the castle and all of the grounds, and it's right down at the far corner. And I thought, why would they choose there to sign it? And you see, it's separate from the land. So they were pulling another fast one right there.
That's exactly it.
But I found
and the trouble with that is, Vincent, that we take that as gospel. I see it in the courts.
Yep.
When you hear cases coming up, a huge case is coming up, and the senior counsel will never go up to the judge or never announce as to what constitution is this case being heard under.
Yeah.
And people, including myself, we assume that they're looking after us and they're doing it, and they're not.
No,
you have to ask the question yourself. If you don't, they will use any way to get you, and that's the point. And when you go into a judge, you have a contract with him, and you have to do what he says. And you don't even know what constitution. I mean, how are you going to win your case, or how are you a sovereign if you don't stand up and ask the question? But do it properly. Go to the court clerk and say, my case is coming up. You have sent me on such and such a day. I want my case under the sovereign constitution. And he look at you and say, well, that's fine. And when you arrive in the court, you'll be called up before the judge and say, and you say, well, sovereign constitution, that you're a sovereign citizen, the sovereign republic of Era, and that's what you want. And we'll see then who's right or wrong. But to have five constitutions in the state, and that's the question. I was asked Michael D. Higgins, but I wasn't allowed to ask it. But anyway, I'm going to write it to, and I'll ask it in the written letter, and it'll go up, because any letter that I sign and seal has to go up for the sovereign citizens to read.
Exactly.
And because I've nothing to hide about anything. And if something is wrong, all we have to try and do is put it right. And that's the way we conduct our... We're not hiding anything. We're trying to tell the truth to people. And the message is, you're sovereign, and you should look after your sovereignty. It took, 800 years to get it back for you. And it is back there. There is a sovereign government there. You are the sovereign. And how good things could be, instead of every child in the country, aren't they just being exported like animals to other countries? All our people are gone, all our young people. Somebody came up to me at that meeting and said, only for the village that in the west of Ireland, they said that the pubs are all closed, the shops are all closed. She said the only thing that was open, there was a petrol station and the church. They were the only two things open. And she said,
you can't afford the petrol.
But she said, only for the few foreigners that are living here, she said, there'll be nobody here. Because all my children, she said, and every other child in the area, they're all out in Australia and Canada and every other part of the world. And how right she was.
Exactly.
You know, they don't want to... You see, if you don't... This thing, it'll be grand and all this. That day is gone.
No, it's not grand.
No, it's not.
Far from it.
It's not grand. But it could be grand if you stand up for it, and it'll be grand. And people have to get back to reality. And again, we were taken in by bankers and all this sort of, carry on. And disgraceful. But look at the other countries. The countries never, it's at its lowest depth, as I said, since 1916, you know. And we had everything, and yet, but sure, if you're going to be told a pack of lies all the time and propaganda, and, you know, and I'm always giving out about, you know, they come out every morning for RTE and talking about, I mean, I heard the other day, what's her name? That Crichton one, the youngest member of Dáil Éireann. She was never a member of Dáil Éireann. There's no member of Dáil Éireann left. You want to be nearly 100 years of age to be a member of Dáil Éireann. 1919. You know, and to have a 32-county mandate. And people, they get away with that. You see, no one questions them. And then you say, oh, well, that must be... It's only causing confusion all the time. You know? But anyway, exactly. There we are. Exactly. Listen, I'm going to say goodnight to you and your listeners, and thank you for allowing me to say those
things. It's always a pleasure to have you on, Billy, always.
Thank you very much, Vincent.
Thanks very much. Night, God bless. Well, folks, that was, of course, the one and only Billy Maguire, and time for tune. Here's a little bit of Feel Good Inc. from Gorillaz. You're listening live to People's Internet Radio, back after this. Welcome back to peoplesinternetradio.com. Vin here, folks, live. Thank you very much to Billy Maguire for being on. It's, what time we got now? About 10 past 11, thereabouts. So, look, if you want to call in, you want to make a point, you want to ask a question, you want to double check something, whatever's on your mind, we do have a donate button there. Thank you, Prepper, for reminding me. If you can spare a few bobberoonies, ring the bell. The number to call in if you want, 443-3309. If you're in Dublin, that's an 01 number, 443-3309. VINCENTTEMP and the digit 1 over Skype. Now, somebody was calling me earlier. Actually, three people were calling me earlier, so apologies to whoever was calling earlier. I wasn't looking at that screen. I've now moved the Skype onto the other screen, so I can now see what's going on. I didn't see, I had three missed calls, so apologies. But do feel free to call back in now, if that suits you. I don't know about you folks, but I am absolutely melting here tonight. It is baking, and this little room I'm sitting in, it's like, with all the computers around me, it's like sitting inside a microwave oven. And on that, Kim McMenamin up north, he sent me a little link to get a bracelet to plug in and earth myself. And I thought, you know what, that's not a bad idea, I might try that. And I did. And it did, well, it seems to have made a little bit of a difference. You know, I don't know if there's much to it, but who knows? Interesting. So look, I did send a message to the Facebook page. Thank you to SD for finding the Facebook page for me. I did send them a message to let them know the water meter group. The first message seems to have evaporated from their site. I'm just going to click again and see. I did repost. Okay, it's appearing there now. Okay, it's not on the page. It's in the comments. So, all right, I see somebody's made a comment there as well. And, okay, somebody there has liked it, so we never know what will happen there. Okay, good stuff. So, look, what's on your mind? What do you want me to talk about? Is there anything you want to call in and ask? And I say this, folks, because I've a lot of work that I have to get done in the house now during the week, and the missus is not a happy bunny if I'm on the blower all day talking to people. So I'm going to ask you, if there's something that's on your mind that you think I can help you with in any way at all, try calling me on Sunday nights if you can. You know, you don't need to go into too much detail in your own personal details, etc. You know, we can keep all that private. I'll call you whatever you want, but if you have an issue and you think maybe talking about it on here might help, try giving us a call now. Wow, it is roasting. I am absolutely melting here. But, so I'm going to go back to water meters for a moment, and staying in your home and the simple remedies that we've developed on People's Internet Radio with the assistance of Mr. T, Harry, Billy Maguire, myself, you guys, some of SA, all the guys out there. The official offer process, I promised everyone I'd get around to doing the improvements. I have done them, I just haven't had a minute. I had a problem here with a microphone stand, and I didn't get to put the scanner back in. I'm going to have to scan the documents and get that sorted. I'll do that tomorrow. I'll get to that tomorrow in the afternoon sometime. Basically, though, the improvements are to re-execute, as it were, certain aspects of contract. Now, on that, I'm going to do a little something on unilateral contract for you. And first, I'm going to read from Garner's Modern Legal Usage, second edition. And I'm just going to pull out a little something here for you, because this is important that we get our head around this type of thing. So if you look up unilateral contract, for example, you'll be told, go look up bilateral contract. And I have it here somewhere. Not that page. There. I've lost it again. I should have marked it. Wait a minute. Bilateral contract and unilateral contract. Here we go. A unilateral contract is one in which a promise is given by one party in exchange for the actual performance by the other. I'll read that again. A unilateral contract is one in which a promise is given by, say, one man in exchange for the actual performance by the other man. Now, that's important to understand. So, in other words, if you promise to pay me $10 euros, it's if I clean your windows, it's only after I've cleaned your windows that the contract was formed. It was based upon performance, okay? In other words, if I don't clean your windows, you don't owe me the money. That's not true, however, anymore under civil statutes, and I'll explain why. Believe it or not, nowadays, if you engage a corporation to do something, you owe the money immediately on the contract. And I know that might sound strange, but believe it or not, on the continent, they're well used to this. On the continent, for example, in most countries over there, as far as I'm aware, if you have an electricity, utility supplier of some description, you pay them in advance. Not a lot of people here in Ireland realize that, but they are going to try to bring that in over here, folks. I'll continue. A bilateral contract is one in which each party promises a performance so that each party is an obligor on his own promise and an obligee on the other's promise. Yeah, I'll read that again. A bilateral contract is one in which each party promises a performance. So in other words, I'll wash your car if you wash my windows of my house. Okay? So I'm an obligor and an obligee, and you're an obligor and an obligee. It is a legal I can never pronounce that word. Solecism. Is that how you pronounce that? Solecism. I can never get that right. To use unilateral contract to mean a promise for which no consideration was requested. This is where water meters come in, folks. Or for which no sufficient consideration was given. Now think about that one. I'll read it again. It is a legal solecism. I can never pronounce it. I just can't pronounce that, folks. How the hell does anybody know how to pronounce that? Call in if you know how to pronounce that and tell me how the hell to say that word. I think it's solecism, but I'm not sure. It is a legal solecism, I'm going to use that, to use unilateral contract to mean a promise for which no consideration was requested. So in other words, they drop a flyer or something through your postal system and they tell you, hey, we're the water meter guys, and next week we're going to show up and fit a water meter for you. No consideration was requested. You see? And for which no sufficient consideration was given. You didn't give it anything, okay? This thing just arrived through your door, and next thing you know, they're they arrive with a JCB and they start digging up your front footpath. Instead, the phrase should be reserved for cases in which a legal obligation has been created, but only one party to the obligation has made a promise. Now, that's a head melter, that one. If the transaction does not result in a legal obligation, unilateral offer or unilateral promise may describe the transaction, but not unilateral contract. I'm going to read that again, okay? It is a legal solecism to use unilateral contract to mean a promise for which no consideration was requested, or for which no sufficient consideration was given. Instead, the phrase should be reserved for cases in which a legal obligation has been created, but only one party to the obligation has made a promise. So if you can work out something like that in your head, fair play to you. I'm going to try and break it down, keep it simple. Effectively, when you're dealing with this type of stuff, the water meter company stick a flyer in your door and they basically say, in 2 weeks we're going to show up and we're going to do blah, blah, blah. And they don't mention the bill, right? Look at the flyers. They don't mention the bill. They don't mention, and it's going to cost you X, Y, Z. They don't mention it. There's no consideration discussed or mentioned on the flyer. It's a unilateral, as it were, offer, if you will. It's like a naked offer. There's no consideration. Now, there is consideration on their side to some degree because, well, they're going to show up and do the actual work. But they haven't gotten your agreement yet. Where they're going to look for your agreement is the moment they fit the water meter and they'll knock on your door or run your tap for an hour to clean out the meter. And the moment you do that, the moment you turn on the tap after they fit the meter, they're now going to presume you've accepted the contract. And now it's good both sides. Now you've performed too, and we now have offer acceptance, consideration, performance, lawful terms, yada yada, on both sides. That's why when Irish Water, Ishgair, whatever the hell they want to call themselves, that's why when they said, we will sue for breach of contract in the normal manner if people don't pay. And I know a lot of people were scratching their heads about this when I go, but how can they sue for a breach of contract in the normal manner? They're relying upon you agreeing and not understanding that you didn't actually agree. But if you turn on the tap when they ask you to flush out the meter installation, that's when they're going to claim you agreed. Now, if you're not in the house, of course, they'd put a sticker in your door, or a flyer, or some jazz like that. Now, again, a lot of people might not know how to deal with that. To me, that's relatively simple. I'd be just using the RTS label in that manner. Return to sender, do not recognize you, all that jazz that we talk about on here. The label is on the site, you can find it. And, what's the normal matter from Jam Lynch? He's lost. Okay, sorry, have I confused you, folks? Have I confused you? Okay, if I've confused you, maybe I'll take it slowly and we'll do this again. We'll do it again. The water meter companies, basically, they send a flyer around the doors, through the letterboxes to let you know they're going to show up in a week or 2 weeks or whatever to fit the water meter. They're assuming now that they've given you notice, advance notice. Oh, in the normal manner. Sorry, folks, in the podcast, I'm addressing guys in the chat box here at the moment. We have a live chat box on peoplesinternetradio.com. So if you're wondering why the conversation is a bit disjointed, I'm reading comments in the chat box here. And if you are listening on the podcast, do join up on the site so you can get involved in the chat. Some lovely people in there. Some right sods too, but some lovely people. Yeah, so they're saying they will sue in the normal manner for breach of contract, as if, well, everything's fine. In other words, they're saying they will sue you if you don't pay your water bill, as if there was a contract signed by both parties and agreed. That's what they're saying. You know, even though there isn't at the moment, they're claiming that if you turn on the tap and use the water after they fit the meter, effectively, that there now is, and that you owe them. And because you've performed, you see? Does that make any more sense? Am I getting it clear? Yeah, it starts off as an implied contract, Eddie Goldtooth. Yes, and they're basically going to claim that once you, they'll knock on the door and say, right, run your meter through or run water through or whatever, you turn on the tap, it's now a good contract as far as they're concerned. I mean, it's not. It's bullshit and lies, folks. I mean, we all know that. But I'm just telling you, that's what they've put out there. That's what they're claiming. That's the way they're going to go about it, basically. That's what they're going to bring to the little cute judgy-wudgy in the court. And they're going to try. Then, of course, you see, they're going to do that because they're going to say, well, you know, they'll have testimony and affidavits and witnesses, and they'll have the whole nine yards. You better believe they'll have their ducks in a row. And look, if you're Joe Soap and you don't know how this stuff operates, I'm going to tell you here now that the guy in the courtroom, the high chair, he is going to grant the judgment against you. He will, or against the name. You know what I mean? So, and that'll be the end of that, as they say. Now again, that's not a problem for me, folks. I understand how to operate when they do stuff like that, and it's very simple. It's just adopt your position and stick with it. I mean, either you recognize them or you don't. Personally, I won't be recognizing anything to do with that. And, I accept that what we call water is, not only is it here, it's been here as long as everything else has been here. if they want to show me how somehow they can, bring new atoms of water into existence from nowhere, and I mean from nowhere, well, fine, that's a hell of a parlor trick. I still won't be paying for it, but that's a hell of a parlor trick. But they can't, right? I mean, everything we use, it goes through a cycle. There's a water cycle. There's an air cycle. That's what the earth is. It's one cycle inside another, wrapped around another, it's a cycle in a cycle. It's a wheel in a wheel, spiral in a spiral, circle in a circle. That's what it is. I mean, there's a chance that, think of one of your heroes. Think of a historical hero. Well, there's a good chance you have inhaled and exhaled the same exact molecule of air that they did. Even probably going back a million years. Who knows? There's a good chance. Every puff of air, every sup of water, well, the earth moves stuff around. I mean, think of the guy fishing in the river, and somebody comes up to say, that river's mine from there to there. Well, you may say to him, well, you better get after it because it seems to have just fecked off down the ray there, And, you see, you can't own a river, folks. The river is flowing and moving. He might claim to own the land that the river is flowing through, which is really what he's saying when he's saying, that's my river, right? But, of course, it's not his river. We don't really own property. When we use the term own, what we mean is, well, I have lawful use of it. And, and peaceful lawful use. And, of course, people will always try to, because we're idiots. Effectively, we're idiots, folks, in so many levels. We, even if others are in trouble, some of us won't help. I know a lot of us will. But there's many of us out there, apparently, who will walk past a dying, starving man or woman in the street and step over them. I remember people telling me those stories when I was a young lad, very young, saying, some of the big cities in the world, literally, they will, if you fall down, they'll walk over you, as if this was such a shocking thing, because there was no way that would happen in Ireland. And I'd like to think it wouldn't, but I think it actually will, and does. I've seen it many a time, walking through the city, people literally keel over, and people just walk over. Well, they don't walk on them, but they have to, they walk around them, I suppose. But, some of us are horrible, folks. Some of us are really, really horrible people. I mean, could you, I think this came up the other night. If I said to you, I have a special mirror here for you, and you can decide whether you want to look into it or not, but it's not going to reflect what you look like. Instead, it's going to reflect your character. And I wonder if I could make such a mirror and produce it. I often wonder how many people could actually confidently gaze into that mirror. That would be a hell of a mirror, wouldn't it? I'd have to think twice about that one myself. I'd like to think I'd be able to just. I think our egos collectively would say yes, of course. I mean, I'm such a wonderful person. I'd have no problem looking in that mirror. I don't know, folks. I don't know. We all have dark shadows and dark alleys in our characters, don't we? So, just a little something to think on, I suppose. There was a couple of other news items that I just wanted to go through. Just things I thought were, well, this one, oh, go look at this. I'm going to put this link into the chat box for you, folks. Have a look at this. This was disgusting. This was in the Irish Independent. A forgotten boy whose beating led to his death and his burial in an unmarked grave. The body of a 15-year-old boy who was brutally beaten and died a few days later in hospital lies in a communal unmarked grave. John Pike had no family to claim his remains or ask why he died. Days after, he was beaten with a leather strap at an industrial school in Tralee, County Kerry. Historian, author and columnist Ronald Dwyer, who grew up within a mile of St. Joseph's Industrial School, a Christian Brothers monastery, which was demolished in the 80s, said he wasn't surprised to hear about the discovery of mass grave near Bonsecure's mother and baby home in Tumen, County Galway. Oh, by the way, just for anybody foreign, perhaps, who's reading, we pronounce T-U-A-M. Most people here will pronounce it as Tume. I know it's probably Tume, but we generally say Tume as if it's a C-H. Anyway, I'll move on. But when you read about this this incident, the way this boy was treated, it's horrific. It's absolutely horrific. In February 1958, Pike was suffering double pneumonia. He'd lost his appetite and was beaten by brother Connor Lane in the dining hall in front of the other boys for not eating. He had a carbuncle on his neck, which Lane burst with a blow of a leather strap. Pike was taken to hospital, where he died 4 days later of blood poisoning. We're going to hear more and more of this. It seems that they may have decided now, right, well, let's get rid of all of this. Let's put it all out now. See, I don't think anything comes out for no reason. And even there you go, as some essay said in the chat box, the bodies in Tume were actually discovered in 95, but kept undercover, not a new discovery. And I think it was actually 1970, there you go, Liam and Gollum, 1975 is correct. But of course, it was all kept undercover from day one. How many so-called religious institutes and industrial schools and so-called Magdalen laundries and Christian Butter schools, how many deaths collectively are they responsible for? Well, it makes you wonder. I'm going to read a story here from the Mail Online. We can offer a better class of baby with a good background. This was in 1961, a letter from nuns to adoptive parents. So I'm going to read this letter. It's Sean Ross Abbey, Ross Cray, County Tipperary, 26th of July, 1961, marked the Feast of St. Anne. How do you hear this? Dear Mrs. Brennan, we got your letter, and I would like you to think more about the adoption of a two-year-old girl. We had a wonderful reference from your priest, and we think you should take a baby over 6 months. For one reason, the baby will be brought up just as you would bring your own child up, and a child of 2 years has been too long in an institution to fall easy into your ways. Another thing is, the better class girl has to leave here quickly so as not to be detected in her sorrow, and so the better class child will be younger. All this thought out would convene you more of taking a young child. Now at the moment we have a very nice little girl, Mary Margaret, who was born 9th of December 1960 and is now almost 8 months old. She is of good background and very intelligent. If you care to have this child, you'll need to let me know by return post, as we have a very, and I'm assuming it continues on there, let me see. No, that's where it stops. There's another one. Another letter. Wait, you hear this one. Again, Sean Ross Abbey, Ross Cray, County Tipperary. 19th of July, 1961, Feast of St. Vincent de Paul. Dear Mr. and Mrs. Brennan, we had a very nice letter from your priest, and we are pleased that you preserved in your application, so I think we will be able to give you a baby. Kindly let me know, by return post if possible, what age baby you would be interested in. At the moment, we have two lovely boys who were, with very great difficulty, taken back from Protestant homes in England. Both have really good background. Don't delay in writing, as we have a very great demand for children at the moment. And they sign off. Now, I'm going to tell you something, folks, that's not written in those letters. I'm going to tell you what's written in between the lines. And what's written in between the lines is, send money. The children were bought and sold. That's what happened. That's what happened, folks. They were bought and sold. Just like cattle. I know it's not nice. I know it's not nice to have to face up to this, but that's how it was done. WikiLeaks. Children under care of Irish government end up in brothels. And this is dated Cathy Hayes, 4th of June, 2011. US Embassy cables revealed via WikiLeaks show that children who have gone missing from Irish state care over the last 3 years have ended up working as sex slaves in brothels. During a private briefing with diplomats from the American Embassy in Dublin, the health service executive made this shocking admission. The cables show that foreign-born children who were under the care of the HSE went missing and ended up in sex trade as far back as 2008, in their sex trade, pardon me. The HSE made these admissions while US diplomats were conducting research for an annual report into people trafficking in Ireland. It's slavery, folks. They buy and sell people. That's what they do. Slavery has gone nowhere. Nowhere. Still exists. I found that David Letterman clip. I don't know if I gave you the link. I'll give you the link now. I won't play it, but I'll give you the link. It's an interesting one. Copy and paste. I'll give you the other. Oops, I hit delete, not paste. There we go. That's the David Letterman clip there with David Cameron mentioning that Runnymede was an island. And that's where Magna Carta, of course, was given the seal. But there's a lot more to come from these industrial schools, so-called. I'm going to call them what they actually were. Slave camps. They were slave camps where you could buy children. And you could do what the hell you wanted with them. There's no way those little nuns' orders would build up billions and billions in their bank accounts like they all have if they weren't doing so. And it's just, I'm sorry folks, it's just another fucked up cult. That's what they are. And I know there's probably people going, but Vin, they did such good work. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. I mean, my mother's told me stories about these so-called women of faith. And the stories she'd tell you make your toenails curl. She absolutely despised them. One of my aunts was in one of those Magdalene laundries, and the stories she could tell you take years off your life just listening. It really would. Horrific. Horrific. It's like people talking, you know, on the radio, and they're talking about the Garda Síochána, and they say, but they've a very hard job, the guards. Very hard job. No, they don't. No, they don't. I'll tell you what a hard job is. A hard job is digging ditches. A hard job is being a carpenter, or a builder, or a plasterer, or a plumber, or an electrician, or a farmer. They're hard jobs. They're hard jobs. Being a guard is not a hard job, folks. It's not. I'm sorry, but it's not. They say, but it's a dangerous job. No, it's not. Not particularly dangerous. No more dangerous than any other job. In fact, I would suggest every other job is more dangerous. I mean, look at the figures for the people who die, inverted commas, in the line of duty doing their jobs. I think farming in Ireland is one of the most dangerous jobs there is. But being a guard is not a hard job, and it's not a dangerous job. On occasion, it can get a bit ropey. But if you're a proper guard, acting the way a guard is supposed to be, it shouldn't be that dangerous. That's what their procedures are for, that they never seem to follow. But no, it's not a hard job. And yes, there are elements of danger, but they knew about that. I mean, why do people keep banging on about, the guards, it's a dangerous job? Well, sure, but they knew that when they became guards, right? Speaking of guards, the baton that the Gardaí carry. Anybody know the source of the baton that the Gardaí carry, that the police forces? Anybody know where that came from? I mean, I do, I know. Just a little aside here. Anybody want to mention a word? I'll give you a few minutes on that one. No Googling, no Googling, folks. Where did the policeman's truncheon come from? What was its source? They still have the same guy in courtrooms in modern times. And you've probably heard the term lots of times, and you probably just didn't connect the two dots. But, I found it was interesting, particularly when I realised where it came from, its source of the baton. Now, here's the thing, you see. Garda Síochána are supposed to be unarmed. They're not even supposed to have a baton here, folks. They're not even supposed to have a baton. Now, what the hell they're doing running around with guns is beyond me. No, Billy Club, Robert Peel, no, Admiralty, no. No, legal priest, no. 100 meter relay, no. Party whip, these are the suggestions that are coming in. No. The word you want to look up is, here, I'll dig it out for you here. It's tipstaff. And in Irish courts, they still have the tipstaff. And the tipstaff itself is where the policeman's truncheon came from. Now, the tipstaff, here's one here. Okay, I'll open that one there for you. Here's a link from Citizens Information. Each judge in Ireland has a personal assistant in court called a tipstaff. He or she wears a black gown, and when he or she is in court, he or she usually sits on a chair at one side of the judge. One of his or her duties is to announce the arrival and departure of the judge from the courtroom. Now think about that. Think about that for a moment. I thought that was interesting. The tipstaff's main function is to provide general assistance to the general assistance to the judge. General. The tipstaff accompanies the judge while the judge is carrying out his or her duties in the High Court and Supreme Court. The tipstaff holds a long wooden staff when he or she is bringing the judge from chambers to the court and back. The tipstaff communicates with other tipstaffs to keep the judge informed about what is happening in other courts on a day-to-day basis. Isn't that an interesting one? If the judge wishes to communicate a message to another court, needs a book, or needs another errand to be carried out, he or she may ask his or her tipstaff for assistance. Oh, but there's a lot more to the tipstaff, folks. A lot more. I'll just get you one of the images here. Here we go, yeah. Well, if you just even Google images tipstaff, I don't know if this will actually fit in, but there's one there. There's a Wikipedia. Okay, there's a little image from Wikipedia. We'll dig that one up. There we go. Yeah. Here's the Wikipedia link right there. Now, tipstaff is an officer of a court, or in some countries, a law clerk to a judge. The duties of position vary from county or country to country. It is also the name of the rod of authority. You see, the crown rules with a rod. It's a device of the crown. If you need more proof that there are crown courts in Ireland, there you go. They have a tipstaff. And, it, you know, if you read through that, the name, the office of tipstaff is thought to have been created in the 14th century. One of the earliest records of the tipstaff was mentioned in 1570, the Knight Marshal with all his typed statues. It is a position both of law enforcement and ceremonial duties. An earlier mention of tipstaff in 1555, when the Reverend D. Rowland Taylor was burned at the stake, very nice people, during the reign of Queen Mary the First for his religious views that were contrary to those of the Archbishop of Canterbury. You see, you couldn't have different views. Thought crime existed in 1555, it would appear, folks. In Fox's Book of Martyrs, it states that Dr. Taylor would have spoken to the people, but as soon as he opened his mouth, the yeoman of the guard thrust a tipstaff into his mouth and would in no wise permit him to speak. Lovely. Examples remain at the Royal Courts of Justice and the Metropolitan Police Museum in London and vary depending on the type and rank an officer. These tipstaffs were first carried in the late 18th century, 19th centuries, when detectives in plain clothes were first authorised. The tipstaffs issued to plain clothes officers from 1867 were reissued in 1870, engraved Metropolitan Officer, Police Officer in plain clothes, and so forth and so on. Read down through it. Interesting stuff. Apparently that's the source of the policeman's truncheon. And again, it begs the question, well, if the Garda Síochána are supposed to be an unarmed force, that's armament. That's an armament. So why are guardians of the peace carrying weapons? And if you don't think it's a weapon, well, fine. Pick one up and bonk one of them with it and see what happens to you. No, Scotland isn't mentioned in that wiki, Charlie, and neither is Ireland. They mention Northern Ireland, which I thought was interesting. They just say tipstaffs and court criers in Northern Ireland have no enforcement role and act as personal assistants to High Court and County Court judges. They don't mention anything about Ireland, but they're here. We have them. Something funky going on somewhere, folks. Somebody's doing something and saying something and operating something, and we don't know about it. But they claim, oh, they've no force. Yeah, I bet that's what they claim. But in other words, the Garda Síochána are operating a portion, as it were, of that office. That's how they get away with carrying the baton, you with me? Do you understand? They have some function extra added on, so they're not just Garda Síochána, they're also Garda Síochána / a little bit of a tipstaff function. It's been given to them in the corporate, that's why they're carrying the baton. And once they got the baton, of course, that's where the pepper spray and the guns came from. Because I was wondering, did they have something to do with the military, the 8-string, to carry the weapon? They don't. They should not. The Garda Síochána should not be armed. It's that simple. They're not supposed to be, and I don't even think they want to be. You know, I mean, that's what the military are for, right? Okay, if there's criminals out there running around with guns, well, send in the people who are trained to use guns. I'd be happy to send in the military. Go ahead, boys. They're dangerous people. They're going to hurt us. Well, what the hell is the military for? The military is not for just waging war. We don't have a military for waging war in Ireland. We only have a defence force. Good. Come defend us. There's guys trying to rob us from our business as well. Isn't it the guys who actually can carry firearms that you want to show up and shoot that son of a bitch who's trying to hurt you and rob you, etc.? The Garda Síochána, that's not their function. That's not their function. It's to keep the peace between the people. The Garda Síochána are supposed to be amongst the people. And think of how much safer it would be being a guard. And military guys, well, they know the story. Well, yeah, I'm going to carry a firearm and I'm going to defend people with deadly lethal force if necessary. And I'm prepared to lose my life in the process. That's what military means. You know, keeper of the peace. All the time I see all these videos all across the internet. A keeper of the peace. Let's just say he's beating the shit out of some guy. He's, you know, he's beating peace into him. Or I don't know how they work it out that they're to protect and serve. They don't protect anyone and they don't serve anyone. Not the people anyway. Those days are long, long gone. So unless they want to be despised by we the people. And look, Ireland is too small a country for too small a group of men to be hated by the people. You know, I mean, all these stories that are coming out about the religious orders. I think there's a... Let's just say I think it's like a lid on a steam... what do you call them? A pressure cooker. A steam cooker. You know those ones where you put the little weight on? And it'll take so much heat and then every now and again that valve will go off to decrease the pressure inside the vessel. I think that's what the politicians think is happening. But I actually think somebody's out there hiking up the heat underneath that pressure cooker. And I don't think that valve, that little valve, is not going to do the job. And I think that flipping thing is going to blow up in their face. And I don't want it to blow up in their face. Because, you see, that will create a vacuum. And when there's a vacuum, folks, that's when the psychopaths jump. And they jump into positions of power. And that's when you end up with full-on tyranny. And the politicians, they don't mind. They know they'll work their magic with the psychos eventually and get back in power again and twist it all up again. But that's where we're going, it seems, at the moment. But we, of course, have not just the right to choose. We have the ability to choose. We have the capability to act. And when you do so with positivity and compassion, you know what? Everything will be okay. Everything will be fine, folks. I mean, I even said to the guys at the water up at the meetup there today, look, don't worry about water meters. If they fit a water meter, that's okay. I won't be interacting with the corporation if they do so. I'm not interested. And I have a water source anyway, separate to theirs, so that's okay. I mean, it's a bloody pharmacy that's coming out. It's a pharmacy in your kitchen. That's what that tap is. And again, what people don't realise is that's only the water charge for the water on the way into the home. Don't forget, there's another water charge coming soon, folks, for water on the way out of your home. That's right. They're going to start charging you for pooping. Sewage charges are coming. Sewage charges are going to be 5 times the price of clean water charges. I'll guarantee it. And eventually, they'll charge you for rainwater. Yep, they'll say, oh, there's a rainwater tax. You have so much square area on your roof, therefore your tax is yada, yada, yada. You think I'm talking through my hat? Well, It happened in England. Apparently there was a vicar in England somewhere who was... They tried this out on him. They told him, well, he has a car park attached to the church. So much water lands on that car park per year, and they're billing him for it. It's in internet land there somewhere. I'll have to dig it up, but I had seen it before. He told him to go and shove it. And why they started to lean on the vicar, I don't know. But, yeah, there you go. See, they do that in Germany too. Yeah, no, it's all coming here, folks. Because, you see, they say, oh, that's equal. You see, it's the same in Germany. I mean, that's how they justified our pay rises. They say, well, a minister in Germany gets paid this, and we call this, par for the course. And, you know, forgetting the fact that, well, Germany has a population of what? How many millions compared to our little 4 million? But they go, oh, no, that's relative, that's right, that's just. They could justify stabbing a baby in the face, folks. That's what their function is. And they could justify stabbing your baby in the face with a red-hot poker and, you know, still try to criminalize you for complaining about it. That's what these people do. Quite frankly, they're mental. And therefore, we're mental to be following them. We keep doing it. I'm going to finish off, folks. I'm going to say, Yawagas Kulasov, and I'm going to leave you. Actually, do you know what? I haven't played this one in yonks, and I love this tune. This is Desperado from the Eagles. But things aren't desperate, but I do like the melody. Don't forget, Gillian Trebilcock is up next. Don't go away. And don't forget, we do have a donate button. It's over the Facebook share button underneath the player. Good night, God bless. Thanks very much, folks. Talk to you all soon.